Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people. And God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither there shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away." I want to start out with the answer this evening, with the reality of what is to come, and then I want to back you up to the book of Ecclesiastes and show the despair that the preacher sees as he looks around at the observable world. This is the end that everyone wants. Whether they will admit it or not, whether they realize it or not, Revelation 21 is ultimately what all creation is longing for. And what all creation is trying to do is find various ways to get there. And so they'll try to find it through environmentalism or through social justice or through whatever means they can. They want some kind of resolution to the problems that they see in life. They want some kind of new world order, something to come together and be different and be better, because all humanity realizes that what we are in now is not right. And what John tells us is this is the answer. There will be a new heaven and a new earth. There is going to be a place where righteousness dwells. And the only means to that end is through Jesus Christ, is through the Messiah. Now, if we back up to the book of Ecclesiastes, what we see is the perspective of one who looks out at the world and sees what's in the world, what sees in the mind of man, and observes what's going on through the mind of man and through the observable world. And when he looks at the world and he looks at the actions of man, what he comes up with is this picture of life under the sun. And much of what is going on in the book of Ecclesiastes, it's full of despair and darkness and gloom. You begin reading this book and you see, not that it's just full of that, but it is reality. It is true. When you look at the world and you only look at it from this perspective, from the idea of what men can come up with and what you see in the observable world, things do not look good. That's just the reality of the situation. Everything seems worthless. Everything seems vain and empty. And in fact, that's where the preacher begins. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. This is chapter 1 and verse 1. "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher. "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity." When he looks at the world from this perspective, this is the conclusion. Now, what he wants to do is to drag us along, to drag the reader along as possible, to the point that we're in such despair that we're looking for some kind of answer, some kind of hope to this problem that we see in the world. And so he begins with this very dark and bleak picture of what the world looks like. It is just worthless and vain. And everything you could ever imagine that seems like it may have some kind of value is really just meaningless and empty. And so we think, as we're growing up and we're told, "You're going to change the world." And we think, "I'm going to make a difference in the world. And things are going to be so much different. I'm going to save the universe. Or I'm going to save humanity through civil rights or social justice or any of these things that are in and of themselves fine and good. But they're never going to bring satisfaction. They're never going to bring fullness and completeness." And what the wise man here says, what the preacher says, is it's all vain. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Nothing. A generation goes, and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. What he wants the reader to see is just how small we are. When we look at the world from this perspective, when we look at it from man's mind and what man can come up with, and the observable world around us, we want to imagine that we're so big. And we're so important. And so that's why we come up with all these other ideas about how we can influence things in such a big way. But what the wise man says here, the inspired writer, is a generation goes and a generation comes and the earth remains. We think we're making a big difference, but we're not. What is crooked cannot be made straight, verse 15. And what is lacking cannot be counted. We like to think that we can figure things out and we can know things, but the reality of what we see in the book of Ecclesiastes, and if we just observe life and think about life from this under-the-sun perspective, just shows us we don't know. we can't find the answer so often that we want to find in life. And so the preacher, he sets out to try to figure all this out. He's going to go through all kinds of means and methods to try to find some kind of meaning to life. And so what the preacher exposes is the emptiness of life under the sun. And so again, he wants to bring all of this out. He wants to bring it all to the surface and show us what life really looks like when we're only looking at it from our own minds and from our observable world around us, where God is really distant. Maybe there's a belief of God. They're not atheists back here when this is being written. They have some sense of God, maybe some kind of secular type religion. There's some kind of appreciation for God, but maybe there's not nearness in it. There's not some kind of relationship. And so they're looking for answers in the secular world, and I'm using our terms because they wouldn't have spoken of it in that way. But it's much like in Jeremiah, if you think about that text in Jeremiah 7, where they do the things they want to do, and yet then they cry out for the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. They think just coming to the temple and just doing some religious things, that's really going to help them out. Or maybe the ark. Right, they're in battle with the Philistines. They say, oh, go get the ark. The ark's going to help us. Kind of this superstitious, ritualistic kind of idea of what religion is. This is what this attacks. You have no answers to life when that's your idea of religion, with a distant God. With a God who's not forefront, who is not the primary thing in life. There's really no answers to these difficult questions in life. Really questions that the preacher asks that so often we're not willing to ask. Observations that the preacher makes that we don't really want to think about because they're uncomfortable. And so this is what he comes up with. Here are all the experiences he goes through in life. We're not going to read through this comprehensively. I'm just going to point out some of the highlights to you. He makes his heart and his body marry with wine. That's in verse 3 of chapter 2. He makes great works, houses and vineyards and gardens and parks. He makes pools that water the forests, these massive structures that are filled with engineering and ingenuity of the mind of man. He has servants. He has silver and gold. He collects silver and gold, all the things that look pretty and are worth a lot. He has singers to bring joy to his heart. He has concubines to fulfill desires and the delight of the sons of man, he says. I kept my heart from no pleasure. Anything we could ever imagine that we think would bring joy and satisfaction to life, that's essentially what the preacher's talking about here. He said, I tried all of it. I had the resources to do it. I had the means to do it, and I did it all. And when we think about a civilized society, we think about a society that really has power and acclaim and the sorts of things they do. They can do things like build big parks and gardens and fountains. They have so much money and resources that they can throw money at all kinds of things like that. Doesn't that kind of describe the world that we live in? Right? We want all these pretty things and we want to go to all these pretty places. We have the wealth to do that. In some ways, we're a lot like the preacher here in Ecclesiastes. Maybe more so than most societies, maybe more so than any society before us. And really, this sort of thing, this kind of materialistic look of life, this desire to find experiences, human experiences, through the mind and through the observable world, ultimately leads to the downfall of some of these great empires, whether it's Rome, and really it's the same picture that happens in all of these empires all along the way. It's through excess of alcohol and wealth and sexual perversion. All of these things lead to the downfall of these empires. It's very similar to the direction we're headed, if we stop and think about it. We have so much time on our hands that we begin to go into these all these other directions as a collective body, as a population. That's why we have so much perversion, so much depression, because we have time to think and we have time to consider. We aren't busy like they are in these times, for the most part, out toiling night and day just to make a living, just to sustain life. And so the preacher is filled with vexation. He even seeks after wisdom, for in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. The more he learns, the more sorrowful he becomes. Because what he learns time and time again is that everything is worthless. The first section there in chapter 1 is maybe the most depressing section of the whole book, it seems to me. In verse 9, what has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. And there is a thing of which it is said, see, this is new. It has been already, in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of latter things yet to be among those who come after. You know, one of the marks of great society is the legacy they leave. Whatever empire it is, the inscriptions that we find and the demarcations of what their life was like and this remembrance of what the world was, and even there, there's a little bit of a kind of a depressive feeling, right? Because we think, oh man, this empire was so great and this is what we have left, this inscription. But nonetheless, that shows a great society, right? There's some kind of remembrance of life. And what the preacher is saying is, we're so small, we're so little, and yet we think we're so big, but we're so small that there's going to be no remembrance. All these things that we do, the great accomplishment that you have at work, or the award that you get in school, or whatever it is, it's all meaningless. It's all worthless. There's going to be no remembrance of this. Nothing highlights this more to me than some of what my kids do in school. They have this timeline song they have to memorize. It's about 11 minutes long. Okay, 11 minutes of world history. From creation to the fall, all the way to the present, is summed up in 11 minutes. Just think about this for a minute. How many millions or billions of people are left out of that history? No remembrance, nothing. That's what the preacher sees. As he begins to examine life, what he sees is, I'm very small. And in the end, no one's going to remember my name. It doesn't matter who we are. Likely, every single one of us in this building tonight, 300 years from now, nobody will have a clue who we were. That hurts a little bit to think about. Because we don't like to think about how small things really are, how unimportant and how meaningless things are. Because we like to feel that meaning to life. But the preacher is approaching this from a realistic standpoint. And what he's saying is, it's all vanity. It's all worthless. None of this is going to be remembered. Even from someone who has so much and can do so much. I've seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. This is essentially his motto through most of the book. Everything he talks about, it's all worthless. It doesn't matter if it's pleasure or if it's the work that you're doing, the accomplishments that we have in life, all those things that seem so valuable and important, or the wisdom that we have acquired. Maybe we have this piece of paper that we hang on our wall that says how great we were and that we got this degree in whatever field it was. And again, think about it. In 200 years, no one's going to care. It will not matter. You're thinking, man, this is a really depressing sermon. It is up to this point. That's exactly what the preacher wants us to see. This is really depressing. When we think about this from man's mind and from the observable world, it is dark and it is depressing. Because we have to consider and begin to consider how worthless all of this is. And he's going to have an answer, and he weaves some answers through the text. He doesn't completely leave the reader away from the hope that exists, but he really saves the ultimate conclusion till the very end, where he then brings in the answer of what all this is about. When we think about this, all the self-indulgence and pleasure and the ideas that we come up with, the reality is all of this still leads to discontentment. There's still no satisfaction. Chapter 6 and verse 3. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years, so the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with the life's good things. He also has no burial. I say that a stillborn child is better off than he. Drop down to verse 7. All the toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied. Man is insatiable. We always want more. We see the things that we have in, from this perspective, from man's mind, from the observable world, that there is never completeness. There is never wholeness. There is never satisfaction. We're always looking for the next thing. We get that one promotion, and we're looking for the next thing to come because that doesn't satisfy. This is the discontented nature of man. And when the preacher looks around at the world, that's what he sees. And it doesn't matter what area of life it's in, whether it's our home life or our work life or education life, the wisdom, any of those things we have. We always want a little bit more. Materialism, envy, greed, all those things that he's going after in chapter 2, none of those things actually satisfy him. I kept my heart from no pleasure, he says. Now I want you to notice where this all ends up. He seeks after wisdom, and He looks into the mind of man, and none of that can really give him any satisfaction. It's all vanity. It's all striving after the wind. There's nothing to be gained under the sun, he says in verse 11. The wise and the fool end up in the same place. The same events happen to the righteous and to the wicked. This is what he observes. So verse 17, notice his conclusion at this point. So I hated life, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me. For all is vanity and a striving after wind. Without life, essentially, the preacher's saying, without God in life, life is misery. It doesn't matter what we go after. There's not going to be joy in it. There may be some momentary happiness, some momentary joy in some event or some activity, but ultimately we're still left empty. That's what he's wanting us to see. He's bringing us down this dark and gloomy road of reality when we look at life and we think about the mind of man and where it gets him. I hated life. I'd suggest to you we see this all around us today. We look at the famous people in our world, whether it's athletes or whether it's Hollywood, or whether it's well-known business people, or whatever it might be. What is this consistent pattern that we see among people in these positions? When the focus is on all the things that the preacher was focused on in chapter 2, the self-indulgence and the pleasures and the joys of life, and seeking after wisdom from this world's perspective, what is the end of all that? It's a whole lot of misery. There was a show that was on for a while that I tried to watch, but like most of these shows, it had such a homosexual agenda that eventually I stopped watching it. But here's the thing, it was a bunch of young people, very talented young people, and here's the end of that show. At least two of the people have overdosed, one of them is dead. One of them got arrested and killed himself because he was involved in child pornography. They hate life. All the money, all the fame, all the power and the prestige they have, it did nothing for them. It was empty. It was worthless. And so we might think, like the preacher, that, man, if I just had this promotion, if I was just getting paid a little bit more money, or if I had more of my own time to do things I want to do, or a better job, or if my wife was a little bit better, or my husband was a little bit better, or if I just had children, I really want children, if I just had children, or maybe we go some other directions, if I had a housekeeper or a chef, have any of us not wanted that at some point in our life? A housekeeper or a chef, we talk about that sometimes. It'd be great if we could come home and there's someone preparing our food. Man, that would be amazing. Life would be so much better if we had that. I would be so fulfilled, I would be satisfied. No, you wouldn't. Those are not the things that bring satisfaction. That's what the preacher is revealing to us. That's what he's talking about. We can try to go down all these roads, these material roads, to try to find some kind of satisfaction and completeness and wholeness in life, but they're still all going to leave us empty. They're not the answer. And what he looks at here is he looks at his life after all the experiences that are greater than anything any of us could ever experience, because he has more power and resources than we ever will. After he looks at all those experiences, he said, I hated life. Because it never gave me the things I really needed. So how do we find purpose? And when we look around just like the preacher, we see these types of things. You know, the young die just like the old. The race is not always to the swift. Sometimes it's not to the person who seems like they're going to win, that they don't always win. Sometimes the person who we think is going to be successful is not very successful in the eyes of the world. Sometimes the person who we imagine is going to have a difficult life because of the decisions they've made, somehow things work out wonderful for them. We see this and we wonder, how can all this, what is the purpose? What is the meaning behind all of this? And we wonder, just like the preacher, how any of this has any kind of meaning at all. We have to get out of this life under the sun type of mindset and think about life in the sun. Fortunately for us, we have this perspective where we're able to look back. The preacher didn't have that yet. And while he comes to the conclusion at the end that is solid, that is true, what a greater advantage that we actually have the perspective of understanding the gospel, understanding the good news, the Messiah that came, the Son of God who came and gives true life, who brings new creation to us, that we're not trapped in this life under the sun, the monotony of going and getting up every day and going to work and coming home and going to bed and getting up and doing the same things every single day. Life under the sun, it has this pattern of monotony when all we think about is the mind of man and the observable world. And I would suggest this, it may be for many of us here, that we just have a hard time even thinking about it from that perspective, because for so many of us, our life from the very beginning, from our earliest memories, has never been distant from God. We've always come to places like this, and we've always sung, we've always read the Bible, but I assure you, the people who are not doing that, there is a void, there is emptiness. And likely we have felt that too, despite our early beginnings, many of us coming to Scripture and being in assembly with other Christians. There's times where we feel this emptiness and this lack of purpose as well. And we need to understand that it is not found in life under the sun. It's found in life in the sun. And so we need to think about some ideas, some concepts that will help us along the way in our life in the sun, S-O-N, the Son of God, while we are here under the sun, S-U-N. To help us along in this journey. As we think sometimes and we look and we just think life seems so meaningless and so vain, just like the preacher, but we can hang on to some of these ideas and concepts that will help us along in this journey. The first of these is just to appreciate the place of God in creation. Just appreciate who God is. The preacher wants us to think about that. He wants us to appreciate the place of God and really our own place as well. God's place, man's place in creation, in the universe. Where do I stand? Because we like to have this idea that we're big and that we're important. And from man's mind and from the observable world, ultimately we just aren't. But to God, we are important. We are his children. But that still doesn't mean we neglect to see the reality of who he is. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, it says, "Guard your steps when you go into the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools. For they do not know that they are doing evil. Be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God, for God is in heaven, and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few." I think so often when I read that passage about maybe my questions about life. Why is this happening? Why did this person get sick? Why did this person die? And we're going to have those questions. We're going to wonder those things, but we better be careful the sorts of things we utter before God. God is in heaven, and we are on earth. And there's a lot of mystery of life that we will never discover. We'll never understand the full wisdom of God and why things happen the way they do. That's just not our place. My place is to be here for a very short amount of time. God is eternal. He existed before the world. And as Job learned, who am I to question God? Whatever questions or sincere doubts we may have, we can bring those things up. We can wonder those things. And I would never say it's wrong to have those questions and to wonder them. But we better be careful about our attitude and coming before God and being hasty with our words and letting these words come out before God, because God is in heaven and I am on earth. That's what Job learned. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the world? God began to question Job. Where were you when I put all these systems in place that guide the actions, the cycles of the world? Where were you when all of this was taking place? And of course, Job gets the point real quickly. He has no place to question God. And the reality is, we may not understand, just as the preacher realizes, there's lots of things we don't understand. It doesn't make sense to us why things happen the way they do sometimes. But the place to begin is just the reality of we're not God. And we better be careful the sorts of things we say about God coming from a finite mind in the presence of an infinite creator. And really, the preacher has a lot to say about this, actually. It's not just Ecclesiastes chapter 5. You look back a few verses in chapter 3, a text that we probably most of us are familiar with, and there's a song that has to do with this, that the time to be born, the time to die, that whole section you're likely familiar with. But you come to the end of that, And he asked this question, what gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given to children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. But we don't see the fullness of the picture, for one thing. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. We don't see the beginning to the end. We don't see everything. It's a mystery. God reveals certain things to us in life. He has revealed things to us in his word that we can come to know him in some kind of meaningful way. But he hasn't told us everything about himself. We don't know everything about the world. And so we better be careful the way we approach him when we don't understand things. Just because we don't understand them doesn't mean they're not right or okay. A few pages later, in chapter 7, Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? There's that kind of idea that's presented in chapter 1 as well. We think we can change things sometimes, but we can't. If God has made it crooked, it's crooked. If God has made it straight, it's straight. That's the way it is. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. And in the day of adversity, consider God has made the one as well as the other, so that man may not find out anything that will be after him. There's a mystery to life that we will not understand. Chapter 8, verse 16. When I apply my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, how neither day nor night do one's eyes see sleep, then I saw all the work of God, that man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. However much man may toil in seeking, he will not find it out. Even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out. Some of our college students have already left. But we have some who are still here, our high school students, getting in this time of life where you're dealing with maybe some more advanced ideas and concepts. And what the preacher says, if someone thinks they can explain everything in life to you, you don't listen to that person. As much as they think they know, they don't know. And that's a struggle in the world around us. There's lots of things that people try to act like they know, but they can't explain the origin of life. They can't explain how we got here or why we are where we are. They can't figure that out. And likely we never will, aside from Scripture. And the way that the mind of man and the observable world would like to figure it out, it's not going to happen. He cannot find it out, it says at the end of verse 8. Chapter 11, in verse 5. As you do not know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. This is not just one phrase here or there. This is a consistent pattern that the preacher is bringing out. There is a mystery to life that we will never understand. The way that those cells begin to form and structure within the womb, and then suddenly the spirit of life comes to them, we will not figure that out. That's a God thing, not a man thing. It doesn't matter how much someone thinks they know, they will not figure it out. And so we just need to appreciate God's place and appreciate our place as humanity. Along with that, we need to understand that God has given us great blessings. I talked some about this a few weeks ago when I was talking about looking back to those former days and thinking, why were they so much better? And this perspective that keeps us from seeing the blessings in the present. But what the writer of Ecclesiastes tells us repeatedly is, what man really needs to do is enjoy the moment. Enjoy the blessings that God has given to us right now. And so we looked at that passage in chapter 5, beginning in verse 18. It says, behold, what have I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life, because God keeps him occupied with the joy in his heart. As we're going through life and we're thinking about all the things that happen in this life under the sun, and we see the darkness and we see the gloom, which is just ever present before us nowadays. Just news from all over the world constantly is bombarding our devices. And so maybe more now than ever, we see just how dark the world is. Have you ever thought about that? You see some uprising maybe in some small country European country or African country, whatever it is, and it's this really big deal for a while, right? There's people, they're rioting in the streets, and they're revolting against their government, and so this goes on for a little while, and then maybe there's some kind of resolution that comes to pass. And then what happens? You have another country where people are revolting and rebelling, and you have this other uprising. Of course, now we see it all. And then we see this shooting, and then we see this murder, and we see all these things that are taking place in the world around us because the news is just in our hand constantly. And maybe we think that's a good thing in some ways, but I would say it's not so great in other ways. Maybe it brings some sort of reality to us. And seeing that the answers are not going to be in this world. We're not going to solve the world's problems. That's just not what's going to happen. One generation comes and goes, and another generation comes and the earth remains. It's not going to change. We may do some small changes here and there, but the problems are still going to exist. They always have existed. They will continue to exist. That is not the answer. The answer is life in the sun. The answer is finding enjoyment in the things that are present before us, eating and drinking and making merry, appreciating the people in our life, enjoying the wife of our youth, he talks about in another passage in chapter 9, enjoying the things that God has blessed us with. That's what really needs to happen. In chapter 9 and verse 7, go, eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun. Because that is your portion in life and your toil at which you will toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom and shield to which you are going. If your life takes a turn for the worse because you wake up some morning and you're seeing news about something that's happening in Europe and Africa and you're not enjoying life with the wife of your youth, that's a depressing life. That's allowing the events of the world around us to dictate how things are going to be in our life. See the present blessings. See what God has given us. Rejoice in the gift of God. That's what the wise man says. Stop focusing on all the news and all the darkness and all the bleakness in the world around us and see what is so good before us. That's how we should live life in the sun. That's how we make it through this life under the sun that sometimes seems so dark, appreciating the blessings that God has given to us. And there's this last one. When we come to the conclusion of the whole matter in chapter 12, when he finally gives the answer, this is what he has to say. The end of the matter. All has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. He's brought us through the valley of the shadow of death. That's what he's done, showing what the world really looks like from the mind of man, just observing what's happening. And it seems like life isn't fair, and life isn't fair here. The types of things that we see that take place, they're not fair. And it seems like there's no justice, and there is no justice here. People get away with things all the time. But the end of the matter is this. You better fear God and keep his commandments. He will bring every deed into judgment. All these things we thought people were getting away with, eventually they're going to have to give a reckoning before God. Eventually there's going to be this judgment. All the good deeds that we've done, all the ways that we follow God, he's aware of those things too. And maybe they didn't pan out for us here, which is not why we do them anyway. But maybe things didn't seem to work out for us here. We weren't successful in the eyes of the world. None of that really matters. What matters is we fear God and keep his commandments. And so when we fear God, we turn this worthless, purposeless life into a life of victory through Jesus. The vanity of vanities that the preacher sees, the worthlessness and the purposeless of life, when we look at it and we see, why do we even do all this stuff? Everything seems to go wrong and people die, which that's what happens when you have life, you have death. We talked about that in the young adult class this morning. Our perspective is sometimes warped about what reality is. We just want people to live forever, and we imagine that things are always going to be good sometimes. That's just how life works. And yet it causes us sometimes to have these doubts and to worry about, can I really trust? Listen, this is the conclusion. Fear God. Keep his commandments. That's the whole duty of man. All these other things, they don't mean anything. We're here for a short time. We toil, we work, we live day to day. We appreciate, we enjoy the things that we have. We better appreciate who God is and who we are. And in that light, just appreciate and enjoy the things he's given us. And when we understand what the preacher's trying to do, he finally gives us the answer. After we've been drugged down and up and out, up and down, and we see that life is really dark from this one perspective under the sun, what we realize is life in the sun brings meaning. It brings purpose. And so that monotony that we feel sometimes when we're getting up every morning and going to work and the same things are happening every single day and it just seems kind of pointless, when we have this perspective that when we work, we're working as if we're working for the Lord. And the relationships that we're building, whether it's with our wife or our children or others, we do this in the nature of being in the Lord. All this is magnified as something that actually is important, that actually has purpose. It's not vain. It's not empty. We turn to fearing God and keeping his commandments. It turns that purposelessness into something that actually has meaning and purpose. And so life under the sun gives us perspective when it is lived in the Son of God. Maybe you've had doubts. Anyone who's honest will admit they have. Sometimes we don't understand life. We don't get it. That's okay. We don't have to understand everything. There's mystery in life. But what we can know is that we can have victory through Jesus Christ. That even if your life is terrible on this earth, which there have been many people in the past and in the present who have had terrible lives, earthly lives, they have suffered great loss. They live in pain. They have great difficulty, financial ruin, health problems, and yet they're in the sun. And so their perspective on all of that is reshaped. They're a new creature. They've been baptized into Christ, and they come out of the water new, ready to walk in newness of life. And all those things they understand, all that's going to be done away with. It's all going to be removed ultimately. And he who is seated on the throne said, "Behold, I am making all things new." Also, he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." And he said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage. I will be his God, and he will be my son." I want to unpack one phrase from these verses for you this evening. To the thirsty I will give from the spring of water of life without payment. Let me tell you what he's saying there. He will give us satisfaction. We will find wholeness. And that the idea of you're thirsty, that thirst has to be quenched. We have this desire that needs to be fulfilled. To the thirsty, I will give water. They'll receive it without payment. It'll be given freely. That's where the true answer is. It's found in the Son as we live under the sun. If you don't have Jesus Christ in your life tonight, you're not living with wholeness. And it may be you don't even realize that yet. Maybe you haven't gone through the dark times that have revealed to you yet just how dark the world can actually be. And I would love to save you from going through that type of mindset by helping you now have that perspective of being in the sun. The times are still going to be difficult. There's still going to be difficulty in life, but at least you can walk with the perspective of being in Jesus Christ as you walk through this valley of the shadow of death. And when you're in the sun, you don't have to fear any evil because you know God's with you. And you can have that tonight. You can give your life to Jesus Christ. You can begin this journey of life under the sun, being in the sun, in Jesus Christ. Can we help you do that tonight? Why don't you come now as we stand and we sing together?